lives for the service of the Lord in the Krishna consciousness movement are getting immense opportunities for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead without working very hard. The Krishna consciousness movement actually started with only 40 rupees, but now it has more than 40 crores worth of property, and all this opulence has been achieved within 8 or 10 years. No karmi can expect to improve his business so swiftly. And besides that, whatever a karmi acquires is temporary and sometimes frustrating. In Krishna consciousness, however, everything is encouraging and improving. The Krishna consciousness movement is not very popular with the karmis because this movement recommends that one refrain from illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication. These are restrictions that karmis very much dislike. Nonetheless, in the presence of so many enemies, this movement is progressing, going forward without impediments. If the devotees continue to spread this movement, dedicating life and soul to the lotus feet of Krishna, no one will be able to check it. The movement will go forward without limits. Chant Hare Krishna. Om Aganath Mirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unnilatam Jena Tasmai Shri Guravena Maha Mukam Karati Vachalam Pangam Langayate Ginim Yet Kripatvam Maham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarana Vansha Kalpaturibhyascha Kripasindhubhyeva Chapatitanam Pavanebhyo Varushnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, first I was reading this purport, I was very struck by Srila Prabhupada's mood. I spent quite some time in Bhaktivedanta College, and there in Bhaktivedanta College, very often there are scholars of Vedic literature, and they study the Shastra, not only Prabhupada's books, but the entire Vedic, and even beyond the Vedic, or below the Vedic, Shastra, in many, many complicated ways, very analytical, often very academic. Once His Grace Krishna Chetraprabhu, he teaches Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he was discussing, he said, he was giving class on the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the temple room on Sunday there. Instead of Bhagavatam, they read Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he was saying, in my class, I'm officially licking the outside of the bottle. It's only in the temple room I can actually get into the nectar. So this analytical analysis of the Vedic literature, many Vaishnava acharyas take responsibility for doing this in their purports, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Baladeva Vijayabhushan, in order to prove that Krishna is a person, that the goal of self-realization is to have a personal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they analyze word by word by word in the Sanskrit, trying to find the deep meaning, trying to look through the Srimad Bhagavatam and find support for every philosophical conclusion. They take it into great depth. If you look at the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you see this very much in Rupa Goswami's speak, that practically the whole book is support for various philosophical conclusions, ultimately coming to the conclusion that pure devotional service is the goal of human life and that Krishna is a person and we should serve him. But Srila Prabhupada's purports, although they certainly take that route in many ways and quite often quote almost verbatim Baladeva Vijayabhushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti and others as well. But Srila Prabhupada's purports have this unique quality that he takes Krishna consciousness to our daily life. And he very often brings into his Bhaktivedanta purports, which he spoke as being his personal ecstasies in Krishna consciousness, but he also often brings this flavor of our day-to-day struggles in Krishna consciousness into the Bhaktivedanta purports. Prabhupada had a unique perspective because he uniquely came to the West and began to preach Krishna consciousness. As Prabhupada says in the purport here, that the Krishna consciousness movement began with only 40 rupees. Now, Prabhupada came to America with only 40 rupees and some books. And with that, he began to contemplate in deep prayer how to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. He even said to Krishna in his poem, I don't really know why you've sent me here. I don't really know what I'm supposed to do here. I don't really know how I'm supposed to present Krishna consciousness so that these people will understand it. But by your will, anything can happen. So if you want it to happen, make it happen. And with that attitude, Srila Prabhupada endeavored intensely to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world and was, as we know by our presence here, successful to some extent. Not to the extent that he wanted. He left a lot of work to be done, but he was very successful. So Srila Prabhupada's Bhaktivedanta purports are, they speak of his conviction, and they present his conviction in Krishna consciousness in such a powerful and uncompromising way that when we read them, and certainly when we read them with him, they inspired us to share that conviction. We see here in this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, once again to remember where we are, that the demigods are have approached Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma has approached Vishnu. They're in trouble. These devotees are in trouble. And they're in trouble because one of them, Indra, made a stupid mistake, motivated by some kind of arrogance, a lower mode of nature. And in so being that arrogant nature, he offended Durvasa Muni. And the result was that the demigods were struggling. They had lost their power. They weren't able to defeat the demons. And they were losing everything. And they were losing their luster. They were losing their knowledge. They were losing their material possessions. They were losing their battles. They were losing everything. And so in such a state, they began to realize collectively, even though the offense was only committed by one person, but collectively they were suffering for it. And they began to realize collectively that there was nothing they could do about it, that they were powerless. And so in their powerless position, they approached Brahma, who, after meditating on the situation for a little while, he became relieved when he realized that the way to solve this problem is to go to Vishnu. They had so much conviction that even though they exhibited in many cases that they were they had material desires, they weren't free from the lower modes of nature, but still their conviction was so strong that Krishna would take care of them, that Krishna would save them. No matter what happened, if they just turned to Krishna, Krishna would take care of everything. That strong conviction helped them in this situation and so many other situations to conquer their enemies. And so Srila Prabhupada also had that conviction. And therefore he was able to come to the West with only 40 rupees and spread Krishna consciousness on the order of his spiritual master. And in his Bhaktivedanta purports and through his own personal exchanges with the devotees in classes and conversations and so many other opportunities to speak, he again and again and again and again tried to infuse us with that same conviction that if we just engaged in Krishna's service, if we just took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything would be fine. Even though we may not understand how fine it would be or how it was fine. Even as I was reading this purport, I was thinking, God, this is like a parallel universe. I must be in a different ISKCON. Was because Prabhupada says here, he says, no karmic can expect to improve his business so swiftly, and besides that, Whatever karma acquires is temporary and sometimes frustrating, as if we never experience frustration. In Krishna consciousness, however, everything is encouraging and improving. The Krishna consciousness movement is not very popular with the karmis because they have those four regular principles. And these restrictions the karmis dislike. But in the presence of so many enemies, this movement is progressing, going forward without impediments. Did you notice that? So it almost seems like maybe I'm looking through different glasses. Prabhupada had some other kinds of vision that I don't necessarily have sometimes, because definitely I think we notice that there's frustration and it seems like there's impediments and it doesn't seem like everything's moving forward exactly the way we wanted to, and sometimes it doesn't seem like it's improving or encouraging even. We suffer and we wonder what's going on here, and yet Srila Prabhupada approaches. And I know from my own presence at this particular time when Srila Prabhupada was writing these books that there was great confusion, great suffering, so much trials and tribulations, many problems. Devotees made very foolish mistakes. Prabhupada had to rectify them, just like here Indra made a foolish mistake and now everyone's paying for it, right? The whole conglomerate of demigods is paying for Indra's arrogance. So in the same way, we made very stupid mistakes, and now I shouldn't use the past tense. I continue for sure to make very foolish mistakes in the way I preach, in the way I approach people, in the way I try to give Krishna consciousness, and certainly we as a movement perhaps have made some indiscretions in our presentation of Krishna consciousness, and in doing so we've caused disturbance for our entire society. Things which many persons who were not involved have had to carry the burden of and try to rectify, kind of explain it to the world so that we could go on with the preaching mission. So here also the demigods are doing that, and Srila Prabhupada's vision of the whole thing is quite amazing. And when I was reading it, I was thinking, wow, if we could just maintain this kind of vision that whatever is going on is Krishna's will, and whatever is going on is going to be okay, and if we just keep our faith strong in Krishna, if we just realize that Krishna was so adamant in his position of Bhaktivatsal, that the first time we see Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, we see him as Bhaktivatsal, because Arjuna is, he's ambivalent about fighting, doesn't want to do what he knows he has to do, and so he's displaying all this confusion and weakness, and Prabhupada calls it the weakness of the heart. He just was bewildered. And he told Krishna, could you please take my army take my chariot between the two armies? And that's the first time we meet Krishna. So Krishna, here he is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's carrying, basically carrying Arjuna, not physically, but carrying him by being his charioteer, a lowly servant position. And he's taking care of his devotee. And then later on in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna wants it so clear that his devotee is his responsibility that he tells Arjuna, he says, you declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. Because Krishna knew that, in Vrindavan he had a reputation, and sometimes he wasn't quite straight, The people in Vrindavan are notorious for being a little crooked in their dealings, and certainly Krishna was no exception. He was often pranking around and saying things in very crooked ways with the gopis and the gopas, and so he didn't want. Also, he knew that he had made a promise that he wouldn't fight, but because he was Trikalagya, he was aware that later on in the battle he was in fact going to take up the wheel of a chariot against Grandfather Bhishma. And so in different ways he knew maybe people won't believe me, and he wanted this point to become etched into the minds of the devotees, a concrete anchor in their spiritual life that Krishna's devotee will never perish. And so he said, Arjuna, you better say it, because you're a devotee and you, people will believe you, so you better say it. So he did it in such a way that it would be an unequivocal understanding. So Krishna was so determined to protect his devotees, and Prabhupada was so convinced of his willingness to do that. And in this purport, that conviction comes forward with so much force that I found it very, very enlivening, very inspiring. And then I remembered a quote that Srila Prabhupada, from Srila Prabhupada, where he was speaking to the GBC members in LA, actually. I think it was in 1971. And he said, I have it written here, he said, as far as I am concerned, I am convinced. Therefore, I am pushing on. It is a fact. I am pushing on because it is a fact, not fiction. He's talking about Krishna being in charge of everything. That much I am personally convinced. Whenever someone says, you believe, I say, no, I do not believe. It is a fact. So you must spread your conviction by your literature, argument, preaching, facing opposing elements. But are you convinced? If you are not convinced, then it is not very good for me. The first thing is enthusiasm. Don't be dead. You have to work more than me. Anyone who has life, he can preach. So Srila Prabhupada's mandate was, I'm convinced, and if you can be convinced, then you can preach. And he told them, you won't be able to help me if you're not convinced. It won't be very good for us if you're not convinced. And so here in this Bhaktivedanta purport to this verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada is encouraging us to be convinced. And what does he want us to be convinced about? He wants us to be convinced that when all else fails, we should take shelter of Krishna. This is the earmark of the devotee, as opposed to the person who's not a devotee. That a devotee, he knows, he does his best, he tries very hard, he does whatever he knows how, but ultimately he knows that even in the darkest hour, he can depend on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna says, my devotee will never perish. So what does that mean? Just this morning we heard that one of our God sisters had left the planet, or one, she, and it, here it seems like whenever I come here, someone's embarking. I was talking with Shesha Prabhu once, and I was saying it's like Alachua is some kind of a launch pad. And one after another, people take off from here. So then you say, but the devotees will never perish, and yet someone is perishing practically all the time. Somebody somewhere is perishing. So how is it happening? But my devotee, it's different with my devotee. In the eighth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is lovingly called the dying chapter, Krishna describes some very elaborate systems as to how to leave the material world, either in darkness or in light, and at various astrological times, and with the mercy of various demigods, one progresses in various ways. But he also explains at the end that devotees, they don't have to worry about that. They just have to engage in devotional service. They just have to have faith in Krishna. And when they have faith in Krishna and they serve Krishna in that way, then everything is taken care of. It doesn't matter when they leave, what time, whether the sun is here or there, whether the hemisphere is this one or that one. It doesn't make any difference. Because my devotee will never perish. That's Krishna's promise. And so the devotee, knowing that, he moves forward fearlessly. And when he becomes fearful, then he takes shelter of Krishna. We see it with the cowherd boys in Agasura. When Agasura was laying there with his mouth wide open, and the demigods, I mean the bhaktas, the cowherd boys, they saw and they thought, this is an interesting looking object. Looks like we could have fun playing it. And someone said, well, actually, you know, it kind of looks, there's a fishy bad smell, and looks like it might be a little dangerous. Maybe it's a big serpent laying here waiting to eat us. And they, well, don't worry about it. We'll just go inside anyway, and Krishna will take care of it. If it's something dangerous, not to worry, because Krishna will take care of it. So they marched in anyway, and Krishna did take care of it, ultimately. And so many other situations. Whenever it became desperate, then they would call to Krishna, and Krishna would save them. So here also the demigods are doing a similar thing. They're calling to Krishna. Now it's interesting here, particularly, that the demigods, as I mentioned in the class I gave before when I was here, is that the demigods are Sakama devotees. Most of them, at least, are Sakama devotees. And so it's not like they didn't care if they got their kingdom back, or they got their riches back, or they got their position back, even if they got their Parijata tree back. You know, we see Indra, he was 1 minute praying for forgiveness for causing trouble in the Govardhan Leela, and then very shortly thereafter, again chasing Krishna for taking a tree or a flower plant from the heavenly planet. So he was attached. He wanted his position, his kingdom, and the other demigods also feeling bereft that their things were being confiscated, so to speak, and they weren't strong enough to get them back. So in that mentality, they approached Krishna. But even in that mentality, Krishna was still ready to stand up and be counted, to assist them in regaining their kingdoms and regaining their position and regaining the prestigious situation that they were used to living in. So what to speak of somebody who is engaged in a haituki bhakti, someone who's actually engaged in 100% devotional service. Now we look at ourselves very often and we become discouraged, and rightfully so, that we don't have the qualifications of one engaged in haituki bhakti or pure devotional service. We look at our hearts, hopefully, on a regular basis, and we see that we're not terribly advanced in devotional service or qualified in the sense that we're fearless in our process or completely absorbed in understanding that only Krishna, that's all we need. We don't need anything else. We don't need material situations. We don't need money. We don't need anything except the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That realization is very difficult for us to maintain. At least it's very difficult for me to maintain. But Krishna is so kind that even though we may approach him with a heart that is not completely clean, he still reciprocates with us in that loving way. And Prabhupada wanted us to understand that. And in this purport, he makes it very clear that even though we may approach the Supreme Lord with impurities in our heart, Krishna will still be there for us. Therefore, we should not hesitate. We should not hesitate to move forward to whatever degree we can, with whatever understanding we have, to give Krishna consciousness to others, to practice Krishna consciousness fully. And because of Krishna's mercy on us, everything would work out okay. Everything would be fine. And if the last line of this purport is so wonderful, where Prabhupada just says three words, chant Hare Krishna. So he said the movement will move forward without limits if we just have faith in this one thing, that Krishna is the one who's doing it and we are just acting as instruments. This is what Krishna tells Arjuna. Don't worry about it. Just become an instrument. You're entitled to do what I say. You are not entitled to the fruits of your work. Just become an instrument. Think of me and fight. That's all. And I'll take care of the rest. And if we can just have faith in that, the way Prabhupada had faith in that, even less faith than Prabhupada had, just some faith that that will happen, then Prabhupada says the movement will move forward without limits. And of course we can understand that our own Krishna consciousness will also move forward without limits. We don't have to make extraneous effort in that regard. That will happen automatically. So I'm looking at the clock and it's already 8:45 and I've barely gotten started. But anyway, I just wanted to, I was so impressed by that mood of Srila Prabhupada that I wanted to speak on that today. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much. And if there's any questions, I'll try to answer. Hare Krishna. Mahatma?
She was asking everybody to come and read for her. So when I got there, I only wanted to do the laundry and give her a little massage or something. But she asked me, so Mahatma, what is your reading material? What do you like to read? I said, I'm not a reader. I'm much more a listener. And she goes, oh, okay. So she turned around, and I turned myself to Amrita, her daughter, and I say, Amrita, do you want to go with me just to change scenes, just to get your mind a little bit peace somewhere else? And Chamapriya thought I was talking to her, and she says, all right, okay, I'll go with you, Mahatma. She's lying there, she's completely, you know, helpless, and she was just surrendered to whatever the devotee is, you know. She thought I was going to take her somewhere. I actually mentioned the library. I don't know if she really wanted to go to the library. But then I said, well, no, you're not going with this Mahatma. You're going with the real one, real Mahatma. Mm-hmm. So hopefully he'll take you soon. So that was really like a very good example to me, how surrendered she was. There she was, you know. So, and whatever the devotee said, she would just, okay, all right.
Thank you. Very nice. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Somebody else had their hands here. Babarupa.
When you were talking about Prabhupada's mood in this purport, it reminded me that right now one of the verses my wife's working on with her students is Karpanyado Shopahata Svabhava. And it starts with that word Karpanyado, the kripana, the miserliness, narrow-mindedness. And Srila Prabhupada would often draw a contrast between kripana and brahmana. And he would say brahmana means liberal or broad-minded. And so their sense is generosity. They acquire as much knowledge as they can, and they share it freely with whoever happens to need it, whoever comes by. Mm-hmm. And they're always giving it out. So I was thinking of that when you were talking about that sense of urgency that you would call it. Chant Hare Krishna! Exclamation.
Yeah. Actually, I was thinking, and I was planning on saying, but time didn't allow, but that this idea of being, as you call, a brahmana, or willing, or actually even anxious to share whatever fortune one has with others, despite obstacles, and actually the way they see obstacles is an opportunity for surrender. The way one sees reverses is a way to inspire and to push forward and to convince one. See, in the material world, very often we find theologians discussing this idea and even losing faith in the existence of God because there's so much suffering in the world. I mean, everybody says, you know, there's so much suffering in the world. How could there be a God? If God was really, all-merciful, blah, 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 then he would eliminate all the suffering in the world and we would all, I don't know what we would all do. Maybe we'd all go play golf or whatever we'd all do, but we'd all be peaceful and happy and nothing would be miserable and it would be great. But the devotee doesn't see that way. The devotee sees that Krishna has arranged everything, both the happiness and the suffering, for his own spiritual journey, for his own happiness, for his own ultimate happiness in achieving his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when he moves forward to give Krishna consciousness to others, he's not expecting a path strewn with flowers. That's why when Srila Prabhupada, even though he was in the same International Society for Krishna Consciousness as we are, his vision was that everything was encouraging and improving and it was all turning out great and the world was going to, become... He told us we could have the world in 18 days if we were qualified to take it over. Krishna would give it to us. So that compassion was so strong that Prabhupada didn't even notice the inconveniences that he took upon himself. He just was driven by that desire. And each thing that happened to him in his life, he saw as a stepping stone towards his ultimate goal, which was whatever Krishna wanted. He didn't know what it was. When he went to Jhansi and he tried to start that project in Jhansi, and it didn't work. So instead of seeing, I shouldn't, he just saw, okay, well, that's one episode, didn't work. Now, okay, Krishna, what's next? You know, and constantly like that, seeing what's next, ultimately understanding that Krishna has a plan and I'm just an instrument. And my job is to give Krishna consciousness to others, however that can be. Anybody else? Where? Oh, sorry. Hare Krishna. Yeah, I just started reading it yesterday.
Well, it's difficult to put down.
I know.
And so, once again, just Krishna is really revealing through many different things the disqualification that I have actually as an aspiring devotee. So I just appreciate what you were saying, that no matter what our disqualification, that if we approach Krishna, he'll help us. And it's really wonderful Krishna is encouraging this way, because just this morning we have a holy name night group. We meet once a week, and I missed yesterday, but we're reading from Satchidananda Maharaj's book. And towards the end, he's also saying the same thing, that it's not that we be dishonest, oh, that we have these anarthas in our heart and we try to hide them, but that actually we go to Krishna and say, we know we have these, but please come inside anyway and please purify the heart. So I'm feeling so encouraged that Krishna is so kind and the devotees are so kind, and there's never a door closed. Like Srila Prabhupada, there's never a, even if there's one door closed, there's always something that's open, even if it's just a small little light. It's just a question of having the faith and that proper consciousness, knowing that Krishna is always guiding us. So, thank you.
Hare Krishna. Yes.
He doesn't quote the whole verse, but he quotes half of it. Then in the verse spoken by Srila Billamangala Thakur, Bhaktistai sthiratara bhagavan yudhishet daivena nah phalati divya kishura murti mukti swayam mukalitanjali sevate asman dharma artha kama moksha samaya pratiksha. So in the purport Srila Prabhupada, or the text itself, it gives the difference between the devotion, bhakti, and the jnana, and the karma. So the way I see, also very nicely you have explained, that the why karma is not for devotees. For an example, like I was, I don't know what you call, squeezing the spinach while you are giving class. If I think, this is a Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur give the bottom point of this comment of this verse. If I think that I'm going to enjoy this spinach, then this produce a result, I must suffer for it. Maybe I'll enjoy, but it will create another result for suffering. And then the result giver of all karma is Krishna. Therefore, devotee don't complain, because no karma or scenery can exist without Krishna's permission, the five factor. So why should I complain if I love Krishna? Then if I think that, okay, this will be Krishna's arranged, this spinach is here for the eatable for all the devotees, then it will be jnana, I may not suffer for it. I won't suffer it, I may even enjoy the food, even as a prasadam, it will have effect, but there is no suffering. But if I think that this activities is installed by Srila Prabhupada, and it is for the pleasure of Radha Krishna, I'm doing it, then I get no suffering plus spiritual benefit. So I see the Prabhupada put that 40 rupees into 40 crores. This is a sight effect, because it says that the bhakti is followed by all these dharma, artha, kama, moksha. It is automatically. So devotee should, at any cost, should not focus for enjoying spirit separately from serving Guru Krishna. Otherwise, I mean, I may claim as a devotee, I must suffer for it. That's why Prabhupada, I think, in every purport is pounding the same point, the importance of bhakti, to please Krishna under Guru's guidance. Then it will satisfy whatever I need, also now and future and eternally. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it will, even in the temple, I will still perform the karma. Mm-hmm. Maybe mix with devotion. It's still not going to satisfy me. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very nice.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So I'll end here. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.